The lights went down in the arena. The musicians were already in their places, instruments and droids at the ready. Most live music is enhanced by droid play these days because it allows the performers to concentrate more on their showmanship. Sexy's posse, Carol included, ran onto the stage and struck their poses. It surprised me how completely Carol had thrown herself into the new role of backup singer, but I didn't have time to dwell on it. The curtain slowly rose, and thin slivers of spotlight began to dot the smoky dark stage.
Bonjour, madame et
monsieur. Sexy's form floated toward the stage atop a translucent anti-grav disc. It didn't look like Sexy, of course. She was wearing clothes, for one thing, a black satin robe with tails that hung 2 meters past her feet. Her head was bowed, hiding her face from the ambient light, and she was wearing a hat.
Is that a fedora?
Looks like it. Maybe she likes you.
Then a spotlight, so bright it was difficult to look at with the naked eye, flared onto her. Sexy was the center of attention now, but still hid herself beneath the satin robe and fedora.
I welcome you to where love never ends, to where dreams live forever, and to where the meat is fresh.
That's gross.
Welcome, my friends, to Ménage avec toi!
She flung open her robe, and as she threw it off, it burst into flames. The crowd got their first clear view of Sexy. Her clothes were ethereal white, a barely there skin-tight halter top, pants that were second skin-like at the hips, and wildly flared below the knees, and a gray fedora. With the first song starting, the dancers began moving, and the light show on the stage looked like a rainbow in a death match with a lightning storm. And above it all, Sexy began to sing. The crowd absolutely ate it up. And as Sexy bumped and ground 10 meters above the stage, bathed in the white-hot spotlights and drenched with the adoration of 50,000 crazed fans, one thought kept repeating itself in my head like a spoofed sample on a dance remix.
How in Gate's name are we going to protect her?
Wait if I know.
I brought my wrist communicator up to my lips.
Tony, are you there?
Tony's face flashed onto the small screen.
Here, Zach, how's the view backstage?
Let's just say that there are other places I'd like to be. Any sign of trouble?
All stations have reported in, no problems out of the ordinary. Although, one fan got in a scuffle with one of our undercover bots.
The popcorn dispensers?
The guy refused to pay the extra credits for the butter and salt and took a swing at the bot. We had to take him in.
For what? Assault and buttery?
There's more room in the paddy wagon, you know. All units come equipped with a specially marked Zach Johnson seat. It has its own muzzle.
I keep that in mind.
By the way, is that Carol on stage with the dancers?
I'm afraid so.
She looks really good.
I'm gonna pretend I didn't hear that, Tony.
I signed off. Back on stage, Sexy had landed her anti-grav disc and had joined the dancers. She struck a few poses with the girls, blew a few kisses into the crowd, and then launched into her second song. I could only roll my eyes.
How are those earplugs working?
Not well enough. I can still hear the music.
We circled around backstage for the next half an hour, 4 songs and 2 costume changes. My heart jumped every time a crazed fan tried to rush the stage, but Tony's men were there every time to haul them away. I made a mental note to get the names of all the rushers from Tony after his people had processed them, though I doubted any serious assassin would take such an obvious route.
You know something? Now that I've seen her in action and have listened, I mean really listened to her music, I realize that she's really bad.
Oh, you're just old.
No, this isn't a generational thing. It's the basic harmonic truth. This music is just plain bad.
Well, 50,000 screaming fans say otherwise.
What do they know? They're probably brainwashed.
Suddenly, I saw a half dozen dark shapes gathered in the backstage area across from me. They were tall men, trim but muscular, all dressed in black.
Who are they?
Additional dancers. There's a production number up next.
The band segued into yet another song, if you could call it that. Sexy popped back onto her feet and began shimmying across the stage, undulating her hips. Carol, Misty, Lusty, and Sissy joined in, though they were 2 steps in the background and out of the brightest of the spotlights. I turned my attention back to the men in black. They were preparing to go on stage, getting into formation and waiting for their cue. Then, as one,
They reached into the folds of their costumes and then flashed their blades. You've got knives.
Cleavers, actually. It's part of the show.
Sure enough, the men strode onto the stage and began a hip-thrusting, cleaver-waving dance. Oh, this is so wrong. Did you run checks on the dancers?
Every one of them. They're legit. Nothing suspicious.
The dancers each grabbed one of the girls on stage and did some very expressive hip grinding.
Oh, and they're gay, by the way.
That doesn't make me feel better. The spotlights changed from white to darkening shades of red as the 11 dancers moved faster and the dance grew more intense. The crowd loved it, of course. I don't like this. I saw a 12th figure duck in from the shadows, dressed in black and had the build of a male, but this one was not a dancer. The body wasn't as trim. The movements were graceful, but not delicate. What's that?
I can't tell.
Switch to infrared and zoom in. The vision in my left eye went dark for a nano as Hara switched my vision over to the infrared spectrum. I could see the figure clearer now, body heat glowing hot against the background. It was definitely a man, tall and heavy, moving quickly and furtively. Clearly, no one had seen him but me, but I couldn't get to him without crossing the stage. Let Tony know we have an intruder. I popped my gun into my hand. We're gonna need some backup. The man paused in the shadows for a nano, and even though his face was hidden, I noticed him look around to see if anyone was watching. Then he pulled something from his coat and moved on to the stage.
Captain Ricky says that he has men on the way.
Too late. The guy's making his move. Tell Tony I'll meet him on stage.
On stage?
Put me in stealth mode. I ran onto the stage. My clothes may look shabby and out of date. Yes, I'm aware of it. It's a lifestyle choice. But that doesn't mean they're worthless. Actually, a lot of what I wear is ripping edge. Take my trench coat, for example. The fabric is interwoven with nanocircuitry, which allows it to perform a lot of non-attire-related functions. One such function is what I call stealth mode. The coat uses micro-sized cameras woven into the fabric to record the area around me and simultaneously project it onto the OLED circuitry woven into the coat directly opposite. So the backside of my coat records the stuff behind me and projects it on the front of my coat. The front of my coat records the stuff in front of me and projects it onto my backside, which to the naked eye makes me invisible, except for my head. Okay, the intruder was moving quickly towards Sexy now. I saw him clearly through the infrared lens of my eye as I ran full tilt, dodging the racks of meat and red satin throw pillows that so elegantly decorated the stage.
Sexy, get down!
She didn't even hear me. Even if she had, I'm not sure she would have taken it as a warning, but Carol picked up my thoughts and turned away from her dance partner.
Carol?
She turned to my fast-approaching head and immediately saw the situation.
Sexy, look out!
Carol leapt at Sexy and pulled her down just before the attacker reached her. I hit the attacker a nano later, slamming him broadside with my shoulder. We ended up falling into one of Sexy's meat cleaver dancers, knocking him to the ground and landing hard and awkwardly on his leg. Two nearby dancers saw this and logically pegged me as the villain. They jumped on me, grabbed me by the shoulders, and tried to pull me away as the attacker tried to get to his feet and stumble off the stage. Even if there had been time to explain things to the dancers, they wouldn't have been able to hear me over the music. So, regrettably, I had to go the rough route, because there was no way I was letting the attacker get away. I headbutted one dancer on the bridge of the nose, breaking and bloodying it, then pivoted and threw the second dancer over my shoulder as I spun and aimed my gun toward the fleeing, stumbling attacker. Unfortunately, my judo throw sent the dancer headlong into Tony, who was just now arriving on the stage with a handful of his men. His men, after seeing their captain felled by a thrown dancer and now faced with a mostly invisible man holding a gun, opened fire with their blasters, set to stun. I managed to dive to the floor and avoid the blasts. The drummer, lead guitarist, and bassoon player weren't so lucky. Only one good thing happened from that. The music was finally ended. The problem was that there wasn't just one bad thing. The blasts hit the base of a huge guillotine set piece and toppled it. It smashed into another set piece filled with slabs of hanging meat, all of which came crashing down on the keyboardist and the control board for the stage lights and effects, shorting it out completely and sending the entire stage into what the next day's news site reviews would describe as a day-class A avalanche of abstract tackiness and white trash opulence. Dozens of lights exploded, 100 pyrotechnics fired at once, and chunks of various meat products shot into the air and showered the audience. Of course, they just ate this stuff up. I spotted the attacker in the wings as I knelt on the stage floor. He'd gotten up in the rush of police and security people that were storming the stage and was trying to push through them like a fat salmon swimming upstream. The horde of peacekeepers was heading straight for me, so I knew that I only had one chance to bring the guy down. Hogtie! The indicator light on my gun flashed, and I fired. A polymer cable shot from my gun and sped toward the fleeing attacker. It hit him in the small of the back and wrapped itself around his legs and arms a dozen times before the guy even knew he'd been hit. He lost his grip on the device he was carrying, and I saw it hit the ground and skitter across the backstage floor. But it activated on impact. I saw it clearly because Haro took control of the interface in my eye and zoomed in on the device. It was a palm-sized module with two button controls and an activator light, which was now blinking frantically.
Oh, Doss.
I was expecting an explosion at any nano. None came. Instead, what projected from the module was a bouquet of holographic flowers, a cascade of 36 bright pink orchids.
Flowers?
Congratulations. You just saved Sexy Sprockets from a floral display.
Before I knew what was happening, the angry horde of police and security personnel piled on top of me. Finally, the crowd realized that all of this wasn't part of the show. Once Tony extricated himself from the dancers, he took control of his men and the security personnel.
Get off of him!
They quelled the chaos on stage and managed to keep the crowd, which had become seriously perturbed and panicked by now, from rushing the stage long enough for me to pull Sexy and her girls back to the safety of the wings.
Follow me!
Two nanos later, we were running through the backstage hallways, headed for the hoverport.
He had flowers, Zach! Orchids!
He was rushing straight for you, Sexy. What did you want me to do?
Something short of trashing the stage would have been nice!
I'll remember that next time. Hara, bring up the limo and meet us at the hoverport. Sexy has to leave the building now.
Gotcha, big guy.
Johnson!
I turned just enough to see Smiles running down the hallway in his two-tone black and red shoes. He was sweaty and flushed, partially from the running, but mostly from rage.
What in Gates' name was that?
He put a hand on my shoulder in an attempt to slow me. I shrugged it off and kept moving, leading Sexy by the hand.
Talk to me about it in the limo, Sammy. Now's not the time. We'll talk about it now! Right now, Sexy is in danger. I'm not prepared to waste my time and put her in more danger just to listen to you rant. So save it and rant in the limo when you have a captive audience. Why, you?
He's sort of right, Sammy.
Smiles shook his head as though we were the only sane person left on Earth. But he kept running toward the hoverport with us. It wasn't long before I was loading Sexy and the girls into the limo. Smiles looked as though he wanted to slam the door in my face when he climbed in, but he held back and took a seat next to Carol.
Strap in, everyone!
I took my seat by the door.
Let's go, Hara!
Hara, clearly happy to be free of my usual speed constraints, put the proverbial pedal to the metal, and the limo shot free of the hoverport like a rocket.
Wow! That was really fast, Mr. Johnson. And did everything go okay?
Your shotgun shriek. No talking unless there's trouble.
I slid the soundproof barrier into place.
Oh, there's trouble, all right. Your incompetence turned Sexy Show into a complete disaster.
I was doing my job.
I'm sorry. Did I miss the part about your job being to trash the set and cause a full-scale riot? We hired you as a bodyguard, not a demolitions crew.
Sexy hired me.
Gah! Fine. And in the one day that you've been in her employ, you've completely ruined the tour. How do you think this is going to look tomorrow? Do you think the focus is going to be on Sexy's dignified retirement from music while at the top of her game? No! Every iota of coverage tomorrow will be about how this show turned into a circus. And how long before news of the PETA threats hit the press now? This entire tour has just become a joke, and it's because of you!
The sound barrier to the front seat slid open a crack, and Shriek stuck his face through.
Mr. Johnson?
Not now, Shriek. Listen, Smiles, I'm not the one who let an intruder get close to Sexy.
Fans rush the stage all the time.
Mr. Johnson?
Not now, Shriek. This guy came from backstage. He had credentials. I saw them when I tackled him.
And broke poor Jermaine's leg? Do you know how hard it is to find dancers who can handle meat cleavers and work for scale?
Mr. Johnson?
What is it, Shriek?
You said that the job of the shotgun is to keep an eye out for trouble, right?
Right.
Does that qualify?
Shriek cocked his thumb at the limo's right side. I peered out the tinted window and saw the nose cone and fins of a missile, vapor trail blazing in the Frisco night, heading straight for us.
Yeah, that counts.
Zach, what's going on?
Heat-seeking missile. This will not be fun. Trust me, I've done this before.
Hara pulled the hover up and put us into a steep climb as the missile approached. It changed its intercept course to match us, but twice our airspeed. But as it neared, Hara rolled the hover over and put us into a nosedive, which left our stomach several hundred meters behind. Everything okay up there, Hara?
Nothing but a Sunday drive, big guy. And by the way, I think I know now how our shotgun rider got the nickname Shriek. He's screaming like a debutante in a mutant rat colony up here.
I think I'm about to join him. I turned my head from one swiftly approaching danger, the missile, to another, the ground.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Scant meters from the ground, Hara rolled the hover over again and pulled us out of the dive. I heard the roof of the hover actually scrape the street as we looped around the missile and sped back into the air. But the missile couldn't turn quickly enough and smashed into the deserted street. Before exploding and turning the intersection of Shake and Rattle into a supersized smoking pothole, Hara leveled the craft off.
All clear for the nano, but Shriek is still living up to his name.
Wow, that's annoying. Carol, can you help here? Carol leaned forward in her seat and touched him on the shoulder.
Shriek, take a nap.
What was that out there?
You don't want to know. As if on cue, Rupert Roundtree's smiling face appeared on the limo's comm screen.
Poetistosity! Pure poetistosity! That was awesome, Zack Shack!
Roundtree, you nearly killed us!
I'm making entertainment history, Zack Man! I'm entitled to a few liberties here and there for posterity's sake.
I'm gonna kick your posterity the next time I see you, Roundtree.
Excellent banter skills, Zaxxer. Middle America loves a good punster, and that's our target audience for this episode, Middle Tweeting America.
Heads up back there, people. We have three more hot ones on our tail and approaching fast.
Missiles?
Stock cars.
What? I looked out the rear window, and sure enough, three stock car hovers were zeroing in on us. Their bodies were sleek, multi-hued, and covered by a plethora of decals advertising energy products, snack foods, alcoholic beverages, and hair restoration services. They also had heavy ordnance.
Ugh, Doss. It's the Woolly Boys.
The who?
The Woolly Boys. Three brothers, Willie, Wendell, and Wilson. They used to be NASCAR drivers, really good ones, actually. They won all kinds of championships, but NASCAR banned them from racing a few years ago.
How come?
They played a little rough, you know, bumping cars on the turns, nudging them from behind, taking them out with missiles and blasters.
Yeah, I can see where that would be frowned upon.
Oddly, though, up until then, there was nothing in the official rulebook forbidding drivers from using explosive weapons. The Woolies made them close that loophole. Since they left the circuit, they've become kind of cult figures.
Do you have any idea how big these guys are in the South? They're folk heroes. Oh, can you imagine? The infamous Woolly Boys in a race to the death against Zach Johnson on National HV I Smell a Pop Cult event.
Roundtree, there are innocent people on board this vehicle.
It's okay, Zachrophobe. I went over it with my legal team. They say that simply being in your company can be considered tacit understanding of your lifestyle and the dangers that it entails. Riding in a limo with you is akin to signing a release. They might as well be wearing targets on their butts. We're completely confident it'll hold up in court.
Rupert!
Our original deal holds, sexy. You'll have a CGI fill-in.
Lots of good that will do me if I'm dead.
Nobody's dying tonight.
That's the spirit, Zachules. Let's see that...
I blew a hole the size of a softball on the comm screen. And despite the impending danger, I think everyone was a little relieved.
Gates, what have you gotten us into, Johnson?
Shut up, Smiles. Sexy, how do you know so much about these guys?
They grew up in my hometown in New Alabama. We sort of used to date.
Which one?
All of them. It ended sort of badly when they found out. They might have an axe to grind.
Huh, just what we need. More motivation for the killers. Hara, any chance we can outrun these guys?
Chances are slim and none, boss man. And Slim just swallowed a grenade and leaped into a vat of acid. They have more horsepower and more firepower.
Then we'll beat them with brain power.
Gates, help us, we're doomed.
Hara, you're killing the moment. I stuck my head out the sunroof.
Everybody hang on tight and keep your heads down. Everything's gonna be fine. This is all just a game. An insanely dangerous, stupid game.
The hot night air at 200 kilometers per hour hit my face like a mask of needles. The sheer force of the limo's speed nearly sucked me right out of the sunroof. I steadied myself on the roll bar, ducked back inside, and gripped my gun a little tighter.
Tarzan!
I fired a round at the limo's wet bar, and a length of polymer cable shot from the barrel and wrapped itself several times around the heavy faux wood surface. I detached the other end of the cable from the gun and wrapped it around my waist, then clipped it to my armor. I gave the cable a couple of good tugs to make sure it would properly anchor me, then climbed back through the sunroof. The three hovers were flying in formation, a lead and two wingmen. They took turns approaching us, shooting forward, engine roaring to run alongside us for a nano, before slipping back into the pack formation. They were toying with us, like hyenas playing with a wounded gazelle. Hara was doing her best to keep them at bay, pushing the hover to its limit, keeping the chase close to the ground, and using the narrower skyways to keep them from hemming us in. I steadied my gun hand as best I could and fired at the nearest hover. The blasts bounced harmlessly off the hood, and all three pursuers responded with blaster fire of their own. The blasts exploded in the air around us, and the limo shook like an old jet in heavy turbulence.
How armored are these cars, Hara?
More armored than us. They look to be most blaster-resistant in front and rear.
What about the botbuster rounds?
They do the trick. They'll blow the hovers to bits, drivers included, though I don't think anyone would fault you on that since they're firing on us.
Maybe, but let's say the deadly force is a last resort.
Are there any other resorts currently available?
That depends. Is there anything else special currently loaded in the gun that would be appropriate?
There's the electromagnetic pulse. That would shut down all electrical power within a 25-meter radius from impact.
Which, against a hover?
Would likely make it crash and burn.
NASCARs are equipped with ejector seats, right?
Some of the drivers call them wimp seats, but they've been standard equipment since the day they took to the skies.
Good. Take us out over the bay.
A fine choice. The bay is lovely this time of evening.
Hara banked the limo hard toward the New Frisco Bay.
But odds are we won't be able to evade all three of them long enough to make the water.
I'll handle that. Get us onto the nearest street you can find and go low.
They'll box us in from above.
That's what I'm hoping.
Hara took a quick turn that left my stomach about 100 meters behind me and pulled us onto an old one-lane side street between a couple of high-rises. The Woolly boys followed us in, one after the other.
Now go low and slow up a bit.
I hope you know what you're doing.
Honestly, I have no idea. That's never stopped me before. Get ready to go back to max speed on my word.
Hara brought the limo low, barely 3 meters above the ground. One Woolly immediately dropped down right behind us, strafing us from behind as he did so. Another settled in directly behind him, and the third let loose a burst of speed and slipped over us, matching our speed and blocking us from climbing. Then he lowered himself toward us, trying to force us into the ground. He got so close that I could feel the heat of his underside gyros singeing my face, which was exactly what I was waiting for.
Sticky stuff!
I aimed my gun at the underside of the racer and fired. When the two rubbery balls hit the racer, they sent a huge payload of petroleum-based glue into his left and right side gyros.
Floor it now, Hara!
Hara pushed the limo back to maximum speed, getting us out from underneath the quickly failing Woolly Boy racer. The other two Woollies continued pursuit as their wounded brother careened into a building. A few nanos later, the high-rises and cityscape fell away behind us, and we were heading out of our New Frisco Bay with the two remaining Woollies hot on our tail.
The gun has only one EMP, so you need to take them both out at once.
Got it! Now slow down and let them catch up!
No problem there.
I put a tight grip on my gun.
EMP.
The gun began to throb in my hand as it loaded the electromagnetic pulse. I could tell that the charge was going to take most, if not all, of my gun's power. I steadied myself against the hood of the limo and aimed. And that's when the lead Woolly activated his heat seeker. He lowered the weapon from the undercarriage, popping the long, deadly cylinder out of its belly and holding it on his underside like a big Freudian I have issues sign.
Uh-oh.
Don't let it fire the missile.
You don't have to tell me twice.
I pulled the trigger. It shot across the bay like a comet and exploded into a ball of white light just in front of the lead pursuer. When my vision cleared, I saw no sign of the pursuing racers, only moonlight on the water.
We didn't destroy them, did we?
We fried their electrical systems. We can't see them because their lights are out.
The ejector seats aren't electric, though, right?
Just then, we saw a red and white striped parachute open 50 meters above the bay.
There we go.
Safe and sound.
Hold on. Where's the other one?
On cue, another round of blaster fire strafed the side of the limo, sending us into a roll as the final Woolly boy zoomed by us.
He must have pulled clear of the affected zone before impact.
The racer sped 100 meters ahead of us, then looped around to make another run.
We're running out of power here. Any more ideas?
I'm thinking.
Teal, is there anything I can do?
Can you control the driver's mind?
Not at this distance.
You can read my mind over the vid.
Your mind's familiar to me. I've never met the Woolly guy.
What if we get you closer?
I'd at least need a visual. We'll need some light.
I I cast a glance to my right and saw the Golden Gate Bridge looming nearby.
No problem.
Seeing that it wasn't necessary for me to be outside the limo anymore, I climbed back in the sunroof. Ara, take us to the bridge. Frisco's calling card, the famous Golden Gate Bridge, still stands majestically, and Gates knows that it's been through a lot, in the bay at the mouth of the Pacific Ocean. The sad part is that the structure is no longer used as an actual bridge. All the north-south traffic crossing the bay these days does so via the 101 Skyway or the nearby Frisco Hover Bridge, which has always given me the creeps. The Golden Gate today is a national monument, a tourist attraction, and a wall Kmart. Don't get me started. The iconic towers still stand as originally constructed, but the expanse has been completely reconfigured so that people can now stroll the walkways, visit the museums, and patronize the shops and restaurants that pepper the bridge. It's actually not a bad little place, a peaceful oasis in the otherwise crowded city. Very low tech, no traffic, hover or ground-based is allowed. But that was all about to change. I pulled open the privacy barrier between the two compartments, reached through, and grabbed the still-sleeping Shriek.
Circle around to the far side.
I unbuckled Shriek's safety belt. I want him to think we're trying to hide.
You mean we're not?
Lusty and Misty helped me pull Shriek from his seat and into the main cabin.
There aren't enough people here this time of night to hide. Carol, take the shotgun position and strap in. We're gonna play some chicken.
You're not serious!
It's not as bad as it sounds.
Of course not. It's only reckless, illegal, and deadly.
Hara took the limo to the south side of the bridge and hovered there for a nano before entering in order to make certain that the remaining woolly boys saw us go in. He did, and just as I thought, he shot past the entrance and around the perimeter in order to enter through the Marin County side. We created a bit of a stir as we flew overhead, especially among the security detail. As I suspected, there weren't many people on the bridge this time of night. Most of the shops had closed, leaving only a few diners at the restaurants and the small number of people there for the night views of the city. Security teams on the bridge were only equipped with small blasters and low-powered hovers, so I knew they couldn't bother us. And the hover was equipped with a blurring finish that made it hard to recognize, license plate included. But I also knew that security would call for a backup from the mainland the nano they saw us, so we didn't have much time to get this done. Thankfully, we didn't have to wait long because we saw the remaining woolly boy approaching us only a nano later. He was gliding slowly over the bridge walkways, matching our altitude at about 10 meters.
Go to a full stop. Let him see us hovering.
Hara did as she was told, and we floated softly as the racer slowly approached. Then it slowed and hovered 400 meters away. We could see him clearly now under the bright lights of the bridge.
Can you reach him?
Carol was leaning forward in the passenger seat, resting her hands against the dashboard and staring intently at the NASCAR.
I think this one is Wendell. He's enjoying himself. Apparently, he'll get a bonus if he shoots us down.
Nice to see a man who enjoys his work. Can you zap him?
We're still too far away.
That's what I was afraid of. Hara, rev the engine.
What are you doing?
Smiles gripped the seat in front of him.
He could blow us apart from this distance with his missile or blasters. We have to keep him from doing that. We need him to come closer.
I turned to Carol, who was still concentrating hard on the racer.
You ready?
She nodded.
Floor it, Hara!
One shortcoming of a hovercraft when compared to an old-fashioned car is that there's no squeal of tires when you peel out. Sure, the engine roars and there's still the rush of air, along with a much more powerful G-force, but the absence of the rubber tire scream on pavement sort of kills the drama for me. At the other end of the bridge, Wendell Woolley maxed his accelerator and came at us like a rocket. A nano later, the two hovers were speeding at one another in a 500-kilometer-per-hour game of chicken. The support cables of the bridge were a blur as we flew across the expanse, but our eyes were focused solely on the oncoming racer. Carol sat in the shotgun seat, eyes wide and focused, reaching out with her mind to the mind of the driver ahead of us.
Do you have him yet?
Not yet.
We're sort of running out of time here.
No, please don't distract me, Tio.
If you can't control him, I can always shoot him.
Tio!
Right.
We were 100 meters apart now, and Carol held her position, cool as the underside of an Arctic sleeping bag. I was immensely proud and frightened of her at the same time. Then the tip of her mouth curled upward ever so slightly, and her brow unfurrowed.
Gotcha.
The NASCAR decelerated immediately, and we did the same.
You got him?
He is, Wendell. He loves to drive, he drinks too much, and he likes listening to disco music when no one else is around. He's also still in love with Sexy.
Aw, that's so sweet.
That's my girl, Carol. Have him land at the security station and turn himself in. He should confess everything, but completely forget who he was chasing.
Got it.
Hara, get us out of here.
You got it, big guy.
She pulled hard on the controls and the limo rose over the bridge supports. We banked hard to the east and angled back out over the open water of the bay. Then we spun to the south and headed back to the city. I turned toward the back of the limo to check on Sexy and the others. They were all a little shell-shocked by the events, but they seemed to be settling down now. Calmest among them all, surprisingly, was Smiles. He sat nearly motionless in his seat, staring at Carol and smiling so widely, I was afraid that his cheeks would rip.
My, oh my.
You are incompetent, reckless, and a magnet for trouble! You've put Sexy in more danger in the time that you've known her than she's faced in her entire career! And she's played Trump Tower with a Trump clone in the building!
We were back in the city now, just approaching the elite hoverport. Smile's joyous admiration of Carol's abilities had been short-lived, and he began yelling at me the nano we cleared the bay and passed over into the city. I had sort of stopped listening after a while, mostly because he had a good point.
Your overzealousness and lack of professionalism make a mockery of the concert and your personal side projects. Well, I can't even begin to describe how abhorrent and unprofessional they are. And I'm sure they're illegal.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
And you're still treating this like some kind of joke.
Sammy, please. It's not all Zach's fault.
Which part exactly isn't his fault?
I'll admit that he ruined the concert, but he was only trying to protect me.
From a fan?
As for the aerial firefight, well, you know how Rupert Roundtree can be.
I know that Roundtree is crazy. My point is that Johnson knew what Roundtree was doing when you offered him the job. He knew that he would be putting you in danger just by being around you.
I knew that too.
Yes, but he's the professional. He should have declined the job because he knew that his presence would be disruptive. Gates only knows what would have happened if Carol hadn't been here to save us.
Smiles put his hand on Carol's shoulder. And Carol smiled just a little.
Sorry to interrupt, Zach, but Captain Ricky's on the comm for you.
Put him on the screen back here.
I would, but you destroyed that one, remember?
Oh, yeah. Put him on the wrist interface, then.
Excuse me, everyone, but I have to take this call.
Unbelievable.
Zach, I've been trying to contact you for an hour. Where have you been?
Oh, you know, just driving around in the limo.
Well, be careful. Must be a full moon tonight or something, because the whole city's going crazy. I just heard that there were a couple of idiots playing chicken on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Really? Kids today are just out of control. Tony looked at me for a long nano, then quickly shook his head.
Forget it. I wanted to speak to you about what happened at the concert tonight.
I know, Tony. Honestly, I didn't think things would escalate so quickly.
You're telling me it was utter chaos. I think Sexy's going to need to make some refunds.
I was about to get chewed out, and I knew it. Worse still, I deserved it. I just wish Smiles hadn't been there to hear it.
You know how much I hate saying things like this, Zach, but...
Go ahead, Tony. I deserve it.
Good job, Zach.
For a nano, I thought I'd missed a slang upgrade. That somehow the common meaning of good job had changed to something akin to, you screwed up so badly that I'm legally empowered to have you flogged and imprisoned. It's amazing what can run through your head in a nano of confusion. Say that again, Tony. I quickly turned up the volume on the interface and subtly angled the screen so that everyone in the limo could see it. There was some interference and I didn't catch that last part.
Gates, Zach, it's hard enough to say once, but good job at the concert.
What?
The guy you tackled?
You mean the fan with the flowers?
They only looked like flowers. They were wired with nano explosives. CSI found the charge on the projector module. It had enough power to obliterate everyone on stage.
It was a real threat?
Very real, Miss Sprockets. Honestly, you're lucky to be alive.
I tried very hard not to smile.
The guy just finished going through booking. I'm going to bring him into the interrogation room in a few nanos. Zach, I thought you might want to sit in the observation room for this.
You got that right.
I'll advise that you not bring Miss Sprockets with you. And, as you know, Carol is forbidden by law to come anywhere near the suspect while he's in custody.
I know. I'll see you in about 10 minutes. Thanks, Tony. I looked around at the gape-mouthed people in the hover. So, Smiles, how do you like me now? It is something of an understatement to say that I am familiar with the interrogation room at Tony's precinct. I've been there so often over the years, they've named a chair after me. and sadly, it's often the hot seat. Tonight, however, I was not the one in the box. I was safely behind the two-way mirror, watching a couple of Tony's men grill the guy that I had tackled on stage. He was large, somewhere between beefy and porky, and pale, with curly light hair and a face that was equally covered with razor stubble and acne. He looked to be about 19, scared out of his mind, and not at all the way I pictured an assassin would look.
His name's Gary Coles.
Tony took the seat beside me and handed me a cup of coffee.
He's a crazo fan of sexies. We have a list of 1,000 emails he sent her over the past 2 years. Love letters. Smiles got a court order 6 months ago to keep him away from sexy.
How'd he get the backstage pass then?
Good question. More importantly, where did he get the nano explosives? That's pretty expensive stuff. And they were keyed to a DNA trigger.
DNA trigger?
The detonator was coded to Sexy's DNA. The nano she touched the flowers, the explosives would have detonated. She was the only person who could have set it off.
So, whoever made the bomb
had access to Sexy's DNA.
And had the funds and expertise to construct the triggering mechanism. Gates, this just gets better and better, doesn't it? You think this kid has the ability to do all that?
Either way, we'll find out soon.
It wasn't hard to figure out what scenario Tony's men were using with this interrogation. One of the detectives was a big guy with just enough grooming skills to pass the NFPD image standard. He wore a wrinkled white dress shirt, rolled at the sleeves and loose at the collar, that was barely big enough to fit his barrel chest and keg belly. The other detective was thin and had neatly combed sandy hair. His shirt was sharp and striped. His tie was a mellow brown, and his corduroy jacket was neatly fitted with patches on the elbows. It was classic good cop, bad cop all the way.
Gags, Tony. Why didn't you just have the good cop come in wearing slippers and a smoking jacket? He's way over the top.
Shh. These are my best guys.
Inside the interrogation room, Bad Cop was trying to turn up the heat.
I think you're lying to us, Gary.
I'm not. I swear.
You went up to Sexy Sprockets with a load of nano explosives, and you want us to believe that you didn't mean to hurt her?
I didn't know there were explosives.
Oh, that's right. You just thought they were flowers.
I did. I swear.
Well, you have to admit, Gary, it does look bad. Where did you get the flowers?
Someone gave them to me.
Who? Who gave you the flowers? And who gave you the backstage pass? You tell me now, or so help me, I'll have you locked so far away, your parents will need a radio telescope just to see you.
He's good.
He's done some off-Broadway work.
Gary was growing paler by the nano and sweating now, which I'm sure wasn't good for his pores.
I love Sexy. Everyone knows that. Even the municipal judge who signed the restraining order knows that.
Then tell us what happened, Gary. Tell us how you got the flowers and the pass.
I told you, I got a call from someone. I didn't get a name, and I didn't see a face.
Man or woman?
I couldn't tell. The voice was deep, but I think it was being masked. He wanted to be anonymous. He told me that he knew about my love for Sexy and wanted to give me a chance to prove myself to her. He sent me the pass and the flowers. He said the flowers were her favorite and that they were sure to sway her.
And you believed all that?
The pass was legit. It was worth a try. I just wanted to see Sexy and let her sweat on me once more before she retired.
He put his head down on the table and began to cry.
I think you're losing him. Maybe you should give him a rest and come back with just the good cop.
We're not doing the good cop, bad cop routine.
You're not?
That's just the intro.
Then what are you doing?
Back in the interrogation room, there was a knock at the door. Good cop turned toward the sound.
Who is it?
It's Jack Johnson.
Tony.
Shh. What do you want, Johnson?
I'm here to sit down on the interrogation. This is my case.
Go away! This is for real cops only.
Oh, come on, guys. I caught the guy.
What's going on?
It's the guy who tackled you at the show. Zach Johnson.
He's not going to blow me up, is he? I heard stuff blows up when he's around.
Let me in, guys.
Go away, Johnson. This is your last warning.
If you don't let me in, I'm telling Captain Ricky.
That's it!
Bad cop strode for the door. He flung the door open and grabbed the silhouetted form standing in the doorway by the scruff of the trench coat, dragging him farther into the hallway and slamming the door behind him.
He never liked Johnson.
What's going on out there?
My partner's angry. I think Johnson's paying the price for it.
Good cop sat down and pulled his chair close to Gary, who was staring nervously at the door.
He gets this way sometimes. He doesn't know his own strength. And when he's done with Johnson, he'll be coming for you.
Me?
He thinks you're lying, Gary. He thinks you're hiding something. You need to tell us the truth.
But I'm telling the truth.
Please, no!
Good cop cast another glance at the doorway and moved closer to Gary, putting a comforting hand on his shoulder.
Look, we don't have much time left, Gary. He'll be in here soon. You have to tell me the truth now.
I told you the truth, I swear it.
Who was it that called you?
I don't know.
Who gave you the pass?
I don't know.
Who gave you the flowers?
I don't know.
Bad cop burst through the door holding a trench coat and a blood-stained fedora and tossed them angrily on the ground.
Don't let him near me. I swear, I told you all I know. Someone gave me the bouquet. He said it would sway sexy. He said it would sway her.
He fell out of his chair and curled up on the floor. Tony leaned forward and spoke into the desk microphone.
That's enough, guys. Take him back to holding.
The detectives heard Tony's message over their earpieces and nodded to one another. Tony drew the shade over the two-way mirror and turned to me.
I can't believe you hired someone to impersonate me.
You should see him do your pratfalls. We call that the Johnson beatdown scenario. You'd be surprised how many detectives want to play the bad cop in that one.
I should get royalties.
It's just your way of paying back the department for the hassles you've put us through over the years.
So, you think the kid's telling the truth?
He doesn't know anything. Looks like he's a patsy.
So we're back to square one, then.
True, but the upside is that Sexy's still alive, thanks to you. You did good work tonight, Zach. You should feel good about it.
Yeah, that's my motto. Any day a client doesn't die is a good one.
It was well past midnight when I left the precinct house and headed for my car. It had been a long and eventful day, so I guess I can be forgiven for letting my guard down a little. Thankfully, though, Hara still had her wits about her.
You want the good news or the bad news first, big guy?
I have a feeling that either way, this isn't going to turn out well for me.
The bad news is that there are 5 heavily armed gentlemen in suits approaching you from various angles.
And the good news?
I'm not finished with the bad yet. Your gun is empty, thanks to the EMP charge you used during the firefight, and your body armor is down to 20% capacity. You also very likely have 2 cracked ribs on your left side, and I'm fairly certain that the bursitis in your elbow is flaring up again.
Okay. So what's the good news?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say there was good news?
Yes, you did.
My mistake.
Just then, I saw the first of the goons. 2 of them were approaching me from across the street. They were large and well-built, clearly no strangers to fights. Their hair was clipped short and their black suits were well-kept, but were clearly off the rack. They also wore dark sunglasses, so I was surprised that they didn't trip over the curb as they approached.
Where are the others?
Coming in from behind you at all different angles.
Mr. Johnson, we'd like a nano of your time.
Sorry, pal, but it's been a long night. Why don't you give me a call in the morning when your sunglasses will actually serve a purpose?
The lead goon nodded gently to no one in particular, and as one, his 4 fellow goons drew in so tightly around me I could smell their cologne.
It wasn't a request, Mr. Johnson. Sorry for the confusion.
Honestly, guys, I'm much too tired to do the stare-down thing right now, so if you don't mind, can we fast-forward over this?
I popped my gun into my hand and stuck the business end in the lead goon's face.
You can either commence walking away peacefully, or I can commence painting the sidewalk with your brains, which I don't usually like to do in front of the police station, but a guy does what he has to, right?
To his credit, the goon didn't flinch much. He stood his ground and simply turned slightly away from me and pointed to a black hover limo parked on the street in front of me.
Our employer would like to have a word with you.
You see?
I took my gun away from his face.
Now, was that so hard to say?
The limo was black and sleek. Not as opulent or as well-appointed as Sexy's, but this was for an entirely different kind of VIP. And although I didn't let it show, this VIP appearance worried me. I popped my gun back into my sleeve and walked over to the limo as the passenger door slid open.
Good evening, Mr. Johnson. Thank you for taking the time to meet with me.
I leaned against the limo and stuck my head inside the cabin.
Good evening, Mr. Governor.
Hans Speerhoft is a former rugby player, HV soap actor, and movie star who for the past 6.5 years has been the governor of New California. He's not a particularly good governor, but he looks good on camera, has low friends in high places, and knows when to whip out a good one-liner, which I think is half the job right there. I climbed into the limo and took a seat across from him as he advised.
He wore a dark suit with a ruby-red tie. His chiseled face smiled at me as I settled in, and he closed the door behind me.
I hope my Secret Servicemen went well to you. They can sometimes be overzealous. I find that endearing.
Don't we all? He was smoking a cigar, though smoking is illegal in California, save for medical marijuana, but that didn't seem to diminish his enjoyment of it. It's a stupid law anyway. He puffed at the cigar as I made myself comfortable. The orange light of the ember was mirrored in the shine of his gold cufflinks.
Can I offer you a drink or a cigar? I'll grant you amnesty from prosecution.
Thanks, no, but I'll take an amnesty card if you're giving them out. You never know when that'll come in handy.
I like you, Mr. Johnson. You're a public nuisance on many levels, but I respect that.
It's part of my charm.
That's why I think we can help one another.
What did you have in mind? Spearhoofed touched a button on the console beside him.
Franz, take us for a drive.
The hover limo rose gently and eased onto the skyway.
I don't like standing still. We can drive around and I'll drop you off wherever you like.
My car's back at the police station.
Not anymore. I had it towed 5 minutes ago. It will be dropped off at your house.
Looks like I need a ride then.
It's good to be the governor.
So, how is it that we can help one another?
You're currently working as a bodyguard for Sexy Sprockets.
That's true.
I understand that she has had some death threats.
How did you know that?
I'm the governor, Mr. Johnson. I know what you had for breakfast this morning.
I'm glad to see that my tax dollars are being well spent.
You're eating too much red meat, by the way.
There's no such thing.
So, you're currently protecting Sexy Sprockets from an assassin.
That's not entirely correct.
No, Mr. Johnson. It is.
I leaned forward in my seat and rested my forearms on my knees. Tell you what, Mr. Governor.
Please, call me Hans.
All right, Hans. Call me Zach. Let's just set the coy stuff aside and lay our cards on the table. I'll tell you what I know, you tell me what you know, and if after all that we think we can help one another, then we do. If not, then we walk away from one another, and this conversation never took place. I stuck out my hand. Deal? Spearhoofed held his cigar between his teeth, leaned forward, and took my hand firmly.
Deal.
I sat back in the seat and took off my trench coat. I'll take that drink now. Whatever beer you have will be fine. Hans reached into the fridge, pulled out two beers, tapped open the seals, and handed one to me. My understanding of the situation is that Sexy's being threatened by a group named PATA, People Against Talentless Acts.
And yet tonight she was attacked by a single-armed man.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure yet how he fits in. He could be a member of the group.
It is not a group. The group PATA does not exist. And the boy tonight was a fall guy. A ruse, trust me.
I'm expecting you to plead the fifth on this next question, but how do you know that? Spearhoofed sat farther back in his seat, took a long pull from his beer, and then turned back to me.
Do you know how many people there are in New California, Zach?
60 million, give or take?
63.4 million. 42.7 million of them are of voting age. Of those, only 38.3 are registered voters. Only 18.5 voted in the last election. 10 million of those who voted voted for me. 10 million votes. And it was considered a strong margin of victory for my re-election.
Congratulations.
There are 7 million young people living in California who are between the ages of 13 and 18. There are another 7 million between the ages of 19 and 24.
Okay.
Sexy Sprockets, as you know, is widely popular with young people ages 13 to 18. She has been popular for 5 years, which means that every fan she had during her first year of popularity is now over 18.
Ah, voting age.
Exactly. That's a base of 7 million people right there. And as you may know, Miss Sprockets has some political aspirations.
You mean running for governor?
So she told you about that.
You're not saying that you seriously think she could win, are you?
As I said, she starts with a core base of 7 million fans within the state. Add to that any bleed popularity she has in the 20-something demographic, crossover appeal with virile middle-aged men, dirty old men...
And the gay community.
Oh, she's huge in the gay community. 80% of San Francisco would vote for her on the Keech factor alone. Put all that together, and her winning an election becomes a very real possibility.
But Sexy as governor? I mean, it's laughable. The media would have a field day with just the idea of it. He sat back in his seat and turned his gaze out the window.
Zach, I once did a film about a chimpanzee who could invent things.
Yeah, genius loves bananas. I remember that one.
During my first campaign, the monkey who starred opposite me in that film backed my opposition. At a press conference, he threw his own feces at one of my campaign posters.
Oh, that's right. That was hilarious. Sorry.
My campaign was joke material for every late-night HV show and every stand-up comedian on the West Coast. But 2 weeks later, I won the election by 10 percentage points. My point here is that the voters of New California are intelligent enough to see through the media distortions and make sound, informed choices on election day.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's one of my prepared campaign lines for press conferences. I went on autopilot for a nano. What I meant to say was that the voters of New California...
are idiots.
Exactly.
So, what does this have to do with Sexy's death threats?
If I became governor under those circumstances, then who's to say that Sexy can't do the same?
Why do I not like where this is going?
2 months ago, a campaign aide of mine prepared an e-paper about the serious threat that Sexy posed to my re-election campaign. The paper was sent to 1,000 of my wealthiest and most influential supporters. The paper was meant to be a fundraiser, but the language was, shall we say, a little too flowery.
How flowery?
I believe it referred to me Sprockets as a painted-faced harlot bent on destroying all that I had built over the past 6 years. And?
And?
And that she must be stopped at all costs. Apparently one of my supporters took this sentiment a little too seriously.
How do you know?
Because 2 weeks ago, my office received an electronic letter saying that soon Miss Sprockets would no longer be a threat to my regime.
Your regime?
Did I say regime? I meant administration.
One of your supporters hired an assassin?
That is my belief.
Are you certain?
In politics, Zach, a wise man can never be certain of anything, but yes, I'm certain.
Which supporter?
That I don't know. The email was anonymous. We tried tracing it, but had no success. It used very sophisticated masking technology.
So, it could be any of the 1,000 supporters?
Correct.
I'm guessing you didn't report any of this to the police. That question didn't even warrant an answer. Spearhoofed simply puffed a cigar and blew a couple of near-perfect smoke rings. And you don't have copies of the email you received, or the paper your aide sent to the donors.
They were deleted under the new Plausible Deniability Act that I recently signed into law.
Nice coincidence.
I do what I can. I've sent your office a list of the supporters to whom the initial paper was sent. That will narrow your list of suspects.
Yeah, all the way down to 1,000. Well, Mr. Governor...
I thought we agreed you'd call me Hans.
With all due respect, that was before I knew all about this.
Fair enough.
I appreciate the heads up on the assassin and all, but since it's clear that I kind of have my work cut out for me now, maybe you should just let me out here and I'll catch a cab home.
Spearhoofed nodded and touched the console again.
Take us down, please, Franz. Mr. Johnson will be getting out here.
I felt the limo slow and begin its descent. A few nanos later, we were on the ground, though my head was still spinning from what I just heard.
Thank you for meeting with me tonight, Zach. I wish you luck in your task.
Thanks. One question, though. Why are you telling me this now? Why not just let it all play out? Let the police capture the assassin, or even let the assassin kill Sexy. Either way, you'd win.
I'm a man of principle, Zach.
I can tell.
If I let someone kill Miss Sprockets simply because she's a pop singer who wants to be governor, then what's to stop someone from killing another candidate, perhaps because he's black or Hungarian?
Or a former soap star.
Exactly. That would lead to anarchy.
You're all hard, Mr. Governor.
I finished my beer, set the bottle down on the armrest, and stepped back into the night. The limo door closed behind me, and the hover took to the air. I let the night air wash over me for a few nanos, savoring the serenity. Then Hara's hologram popped up beside me.
Want me to flash a little leg and flag down a ride?
I'd rather you tell me that you recorded my conversation with the governor.
You want me to replay the whole thing or just the parts that are felonious?
You really are getting the hang of this, aren't you?
She shrugged her shoulders, gently pushing her red hair up at the sides. It caught the moonlight with its luster. And for a nano, she looked absolutely radiant.
A girl's gotta have a hobby.